This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Cherry Hill Volvo is honored to sponsor the Rich Zeoli podcast. We thank Rich for informing and entertaining all of us. Rich Zeoli, 1210 Talk Radio and Cherry Hill Volvo, an absolutely amazing team.
The tech hearing yesterday, the tech giants before Congress. What do we want the government doing about any potential censorship issues? The teachers unions once again calling the shots. How do we make schools more fair and free? Welcome back. Glad you're here on Twitter at Rich Zeoli, Facebook.com/Zeoli Show. Great to have you with us. Eric Beam is back. He writes for Reason.com, and he was posting a lot yesterday about the tech hearings yesterday. Hey, Eric, welcome back to the show. You're a local guy, so we appreciate you making time back for your old city of Philadelphia. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Glad to be here.
So give us your overall thoughts on how you think the tech hearings went yesterday.
It was a bit of a clown parade, I think, right? I mean, they could have had a whole circus in there. There were enough clowns. The whole thing was kind of ridiculous right from the start. And I think it was really a disservice to anybody who tuned in, anybody who, you know, maybe does have sincere concerns about the antitrust issues that may be present. I'm a bit skeptical of that in general, but I mean, I think there are some things that could be seriously investigated, you know, that Google or Amazon, some of these companies may be involved in. But it just so quickly devolved into an airing of petty grievances of lawmakers complaining about one congressman from Florida complained about how his campaign emails end up in his father's spam folder. And this is somehow Google's fault because his dad uses a Gmail account. And I mean, it's like, Congressman, first of all, your campaign emails are the definition of spam. So, like, Google is doing the right thing there. But it's also that, like, this is just not the forum for that. And it became that. It became complaints about shadow banning. It became complaints about Facebook, you know, supposedly target Democrats think Facebook is promoting Republicans. Republicans think Facebook is banning conservative groups. And it's just like that's not what an antitrust hearing is about. Maybe some of those issues are legitimate. Maybe some of those issues are things that need to be discussed. But it's not the sort of thing that the federal government needs to be spending its time or threatening to wield its hammer against these companies, you know, for doing.
Yeah, and I mean, I laughed at Jerry Nadler trying to badger Mark Zuckerberg over the purchase of Instagram, as if all these tech company purchases are guaranteed wins, and that there's never a social media company that goes belly up or anything. It's just a guaranteed home run. How dare they buy a company?
Yeah, that's the other thing, right, is that once you got past the sort of the basic petty grievances that some lawmakers were going after, even the things that may have looked like more serious issues, like, oh, here's Facebook buying up one of its biggest competitors. Okay, that at least, I think, to people who have a passing understanding of what antitrust laws do, right, like, okay, maybe there's something to that. But then you stop and you think about it, and it's like, well wait a minute. Okay, Facebook bought Instagram. There are dozens of other applications out there for people to use to connect with friends, to share photos. I think Mark Zuckerberg at one point, I think it was him, one of the tech CEOs at one point, said that, you know, to one of the congressmen, said you can pull out your phone right now and you probably have a number of Facebook competitors installed on your phone. Like, the idea that one company buying up one of its competitors somehow makes that company a monopoly is just somewhat absurd on its face, especially when we're talking about the internet, where, you know, if you open your phone or turn on your computer, you can go to any website you want. You can use any application you want. Yes, some are bigger and more successful than others. That doesn't make them monopolies, and that doesn't trigger government antitrust action, or it shouldn't trigger government antitrust action.
Yeah, I mean, Nadler was comparing this to like the railroads in the early part of the 1900s. And that's important to note about antitrust, right? It's not a question of how big a company is. It's about the consumer experience. Do consumers have choices in the marketplace? That's the standard, as far as I understand it, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. There are actually a number of things that you have to hit in antitrust law. I mean, I don't want to bore your listeners, but there's actually like a number of standards that you have to hit. That's the most important one, is that like consumers have to be actively harmed by a lack of choices in the market. The example that I used in the piece that I wrote yesterday is like, let's say you're a farmer in a small town in Ohio in the 1890s, right? There's only one railroad that physically comes through your town. And so you are, to some extent, I mean, you have other options for getting goods to the East Coast or something. But if you want to ship something to Philadelphia, you're kind of beholden to whatever service and whatever prices the railroad wants to offer. And that's the sort of situation that Congress, saw. Railroads were colluding. Railroads were buying each other up. There were just not enough options in the market. I think it's even now it remains somewhat debatable whether the actions the federal government took then were appropriate or not. But I think there's like a pretty cut and dry case, what we think of as a historical example of the robber barons and antitrust law and Teddy Roosevelt, right, coming in and busting all that up. That's obviously not the case with the internet. Like, if you're a farmer in Ohio and you want to use Facebook or Instagram, you can just as easily use one of their competitors like Snapchat or TikTok. You probably shouldn't use TikTok, but I mean, just as an argument, right. Like, it's out there, right? Like, it's an alternative. And there are plenty of others, too. I mean, Twitter is obviously another independent social media. There's, any sort of website. And there will be more. I think the lesson of tech of the last 20 years is that there's sort of a constant churn and turnover. These four companies, most of them didn't even exist. They certainly didn't exist in their current form 20 years ago. None of them were the dominant players that they are today 10 years ago. And I think, like what's happened to the Microsofts and the IBMs of the world, they're no longer the dominant players in the tech sphere. So I think a marketplace that is free and that allows, for new businesses to come along and challenge the incumbents will always be better than one that the government gets involved in and tries to regulate.
Eric Beam is a writer for Reason.com, and he was covering the hearings yesterday. I'm glad he's making the time for us here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Eric, but free speech, I mean, there's a lot of questions regarding these big tech platforms. What's that?
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I thought there's a lot of questions regarding that in terms of tech platforms, possibly censoring speech and then the government protections that they get in terms of liability over people that post on their platforms. How do we balance a free marketplace, government protections, and ensuring that if I post something controversial to Facebook, Facebook won't necessarily take it down?
Yeah, that's really, the more important issue and the issue that Congress is ultimately trying to get to, and they're using this antitrust route to get there, which is, in my opinion, a mistake. The real crux of this debate has to do with a law that was passed in the 1990s that basically says the internet platforms are shielded from liability from anything that users post on there. And that's something that Congress is now, interested in going after or trying to carve out certain exemptions, remove certain exemptions. That's ultimately where this debate is going to end up in Congress. I think that is really tricky, and I'm skeptical of the idea that we should be carving away at that law, because it's effectively the First Amendment for the internet. It's effectively the thing that protects, your right to post whatever you want on Facebook or in a comment section on a news article. And I think conservatives in particular are really, interested in it. And you could see this in yesterday's hearing, because most of the Republicans in the room were bringing up those types of examples when they had the opportunity to question Zuckerberg and the rest of them. But I think this really backfires on conservatives pretty quickly, because if you start to say these platforms have to operate, in a way that restricts certain content or that rules certain things out of bounds, I don't think it's ultimately going to be conservatives who are making the call about what is okay and what isn't.
I agree, and they got to be very careful here, because you heard them say yesterday, I mean, hate speech, for example. Zuckerberg would love to make sure there's no hate speech on his platforms. Conservatives have to be careful because it seems like if a guy like Zuckerberg is deciding what hate speech is or isn't, my bet is a lot of conservative ideas would probably be in that category. And you got to be really careful about wanting the government to jump in there, because I feel like a lot of people in government would love to pass a federal anti-hate speech statute. But, you know, again, would you want Nancy Pelosi and Jerry Nadler coming up with the language of that?
Right. Or, I mean, you look back even just in the history of radio, right, Rich? I mean, you've got the fairness doctrine. Like, when that went away, that opened up the airwaves for more conservative opinions, honestly, online, like that, or from, you know, in the radio world. Right. And I think that's the same sort of thing. If you reimpose a sort of fairness doctrine of some sort on online content, you know, I don't think that ends up shaking out the way that the Josh Hawleys of the world think it will. I think it may very well backfire on liberals, too. Anytime you start carving away at free speech protections, whether it's the First Amendment or whether it's sort of, you know, laws like this one that protects, you know, free speech online, that is really just, you can think of it as like a little First Amendment. Once you start carving away at those things, I think you end up in places where you don't necessarily want to go.
Eric Beam, before I let you go, you also write a lot about unions and that sort of thing. And, you know, I see the teachers unions, for example, right now, they are just running the table here on a lot of these decisions that are being made in states. You want to talk about a monopoly. I mean, schools are one of the biggest monopolies, and trying to compete against schools is incredibly difficult to do.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know, we're making some progress in against that monopoly with school choice initiatives in a bunch of different states. But yeah, I mean, lately, I think maybe the best example of this is about a week ago, the United Teachers in Los Angeles, that's the union that represents most of the teachers in what's actually the second largest school district in the country, they are now saying that they want, as a condition of reopening schools during the pandemic, they want the Los Angeles school district to put a moratorium on new charter schools. They want a whole bunch of other things that, like, the city of Los Angeles can't even, doesn't even have the power to grant. They want a new state-level wealth tax on Californians. They want a federal bailout of the Los Angeles School District, which is in all sorts of financial trouble, sort of along the same lines as what's going on in Philadelphia. There's also a coalition of teachers unions from about, I think it's 10, maybe 12 different cities now have signed on to this, that are demanding passage of Medicare for all, and you know, a bunch of other sort of federal legislation before they would agree to reopen schools. And it just seems like this, you know, this is not the appropriate way to go about that, kind of like the same way that Congress going about antitrust legislation is the wrong way to attack big tech firms, saying that, hey, we can't safely educate kids in the middle of a pandemic until we have a wealth tax. You know, I don't know. I don't see how those two things connect, except maybe you just want a wealth tax and you're using this as an excuse to get it.
Yeah, exactly right. Well said. Hey, speaking of bailouts, you read the most recent stimulus bill that's on Capitol Hill right now that's going around. Give us kind of the 30,000 foot overview of what that bill is looking like.
Yeah, it's another huge round of checks for all Americans. We're going to each, I mean, and then actually, I guess I should preface all this by saying yesterday, it looks like negotiations over this bill kind of fell apart in the background while everybody was paying attention to that tech hearing. So it looks like we're maybe weeks away from anything actually getting passed. The bill, as the Senate Republicans proposed it earlier this week, would include another round of $1,200 checks for more or less all Americans. That phases out for people at higher income levels, $500 for dependents as well. And then you would also have an extension of the bonus unemployment insurance. Everybody right now who's been unemployed since March has been getting an extra $600 per week in federal money on top of whatever you're qualifying for through your state unemployment. That would go down to $200 per week, but it wouldn't go away completely. Although if they don't get anything passed by the end of the month, then that will go away completely, because that $600 bonus expires on July 31st. And as I said, it doesn't look like anything is going to get passed at this moment. There's also a whole ton of goodies in there. My colleague Christian Bridgeke dove into this part of the bill. A ton of goodies in there for the military, more than $1 billion, several billion dollars actually, for like new fighter jets and helicopters and missiles. This is like a way to get the Pentagon back some of the money that Trump took from the Pentagon to use to build his border wall. And since the theme of our morning's discussion seems to be like, hey, guys, this is just not the right time to be doing that thing or the right way to be doing that thing, it seems like this is not really the right way to be doing that thing. Maybe the military needs that money. It shouldn't be in a stimulus bill. It shouldn't be in a coronavirus response bill, because that doesn't really have much to do with keeping Americans, you know, employed or able to make their, you know, rent payments every month.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. Whenever they start taking these giant bills and then they just start throwing spending in there, they throw in the store, it becomes so incredibly frustrating. And then, yep, you know, that's the problem. I mean, you know, these fighter jets might be something they need, but then do a separate bill on that. That's what I would say without a doubt. Hey, Eric, thanks so much for coming on the show and breaking this down for us. I appreciate it. Eric is a writer at Reason.com. I'll post a link to his latest piece, Congress Used the Antitrust Hearing to Peddle Petty Grievances Against Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google. Eric, thanks so much, buddy.
Always good to be there in Philly.
Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.